Turner's Liebesstudiorum. Where did he get the title from? Well, it's fairly clear that he was trying to ride on the success, as it were, and the fame of a collection of mezzotints that reproduced Claude Lorrain's Liber Veritatis. Now, that actually was an exercise which was rather different to what Turner ended up doing, but it was very typical of Turner that he wanted to both pay homage to Claude, but also to, in a way, do something better than Claude. In other words, have something that was going to outshine him in a way. Now, what does Liber Studiorum mean? Well, in a way, of course, it means just simply a book of studies. And it's important to bear that in mind. He did think of it as a book, even though it never actually came together as a book. It was always just a series of separate engravings. He intended it to contain 100 plates. Only 71 were ever published, and it took a long time for those 71 actually to appear. It started in 1807 and petered out in 1819. He tinkered with it thereafter. There were a number of plates which he'd already started working on, which obviously would more or less completed it, but he gave it up. Now, I'll come back a minute to why he might have given it up. But he started out working with one particular engraver, who was really the leading mezzotint engraver of the day. He started with a collaboration with one person, and that's quite interesting when you compare it to what happened with Constable later on. Constable likewise set out to build up a really productive relationship with one particular engraver, David Lucas. And Turner started out with the same idea, but it came unstuck. In fact, within 20 plates of it being produced, so the first four parts of the Liber, came unstuck. The engraver's name was Charles Turner. There's absolutely no relation, but he was a leading engraver of the day. And often it's put, the reason why it fell apart is because Turner was so mean. It's not quite as simple as that. I think Turner got actually more and more, as the Liber progressed, he got more and more control freaky, if you like. He really, really wanted his engravers to be amenable and to produce something which he was completely happy with, rather than a collaboration where an engraver is bringing in a whole, his particular expertise, and it's a sort of meeting of minds. Turner was much more wanted to mould his engravers. And to do that, of course, having broken with Charles Turner, he actually had to go to much younger engravers, much, you know, novices, which he could train up. And that's, in fact, what happened. Now, we should have... No, we didn't include in the exhibition in the end. He did a frontispiece for the book, which listed all the engravers up to that point. And it's rather nice because he put himself at the end as an engraver, because the key is that having broken with Charles Turner, he had to teach himself how to engrave. And he set up what is in effect like an atelier of a school, a workshop of engravers, who in each part as it came out, Turner always did one plate. And in a way, what he's doing is setting a rivalry between the engravers, who could outshone who. And I think it was a friendly rivalry, and it was immensely productive, and it actually ended up creating a whole school of English mezzotint engraving built around the idea of translating Turner's Liber Studiorum images into what you see on the wall here. Now, obviously, I said that it was meant to be a book. Now, it was a book without any text, which is slightly odd. One of the problems with it was that people didn't really understand what Turner was trying to do with it. And in fact, of course, Constable, in a fit of pique, called it his Liber Stupidorum. That was a sort of uncharacteristic, actually. I think the problem was that people could understand it as a series of prints, but they didn't understand how it all hung together. And Turner typically didn't give them much help. If there was enigmatic kind of references to the categories of landscape that he wanted the prints to embody, to characterise. And there were six categories that he set out. Now, they were pastoral. There was something called EP, and to this day we don't know what that actually stands for. It could be epic pastoral or elevated pastoral. We don't know. But anyway, it's something in between the sublime and the beautiful, if you like. There is mountainous, marine, historical, and architectural. But beyond that, those categories, we don't really know, except by looking as to what Turner was saying. And what he wanted to do is to show rather than to tell. It's very important to understand the difference between the two. So in looking at the Lieber prints that we selected here, we have examples of all the categories. We have examples of plates which were not actually published. So we could start with this one here, which is called The Lost Sailor. If you look very carefully, you'll find The Lost Sailor in there. And this particular image was very, very much a favorite of John Ruskin. And Ruskin was hugely influential in making the Lieber Studiorum a kind of a trumpet, as it were, for his idea of Turner's genius. And Ruskin referred to this as the noblest plate of the entire series. We don't know what category that was, whether it was marine, whether it would have been marine, or whether it would have been, I suppose it probably would have been marine, actually, thinking about it. But some of the plates, it's actually, unless you know what category, it's difficult, they could have fallen easily between, say, mountainous or epic, pastoral, or historical. I mean, here's an example. This is actually an historical image. In other words, it's telling a story from history. This is the fifth plague of Egypt. And I don't know, if you come through the rooms, the earlier rooms, you may have noticed a print after Nicolas Poussin of the Landstorm. And this is a direct quotation of a Poussin image. So what Turner's doing here is, and he does this throughout the series, is make reference to the great masters that we've had an introduction to in the other rooms. In this case, Poussin, Nicolas Poussin. The images from the Lieber that people tend to be most interested in these days, there's been more written about the Turner's Lieber than any other aspect of Turner's work. This very, very fine example from the Lieber, which is called Peat Bog, Scotland, is a wonderful example of the use of mezzotint to create extraordinary atmospheric effects. This is, in a way, a sort of quintessential, what we think of as a Turner subject, in a way in which perhaps, if you look at this here, which you would think is much more like a Dutch, you know, coip or something like that. What Turner is doing here is deliberately bringing together all the strands of the different types of landscape and saying, well, look, landscape, it can be a vehicle for all kinds of subject matter. It isn't just the background, it is actually can be the subject matter itself. It can express all kinds of feeling and emotion and association. And that's, of course, an immensely important kind of message to try and get across. Now, he was doing this at a moment when he had been just elected to the Academy and had been appointed professor, not of painting, as some people sometimes mistake, but a professor of perspective. And he used his lectures there as a platform to try and persuade the Academy to set up a professorship of landscape painting. Now, it was not going to happen, but it's interesting that he tried to do that and that he saw the Lieber as a way in which to promote that idea of landscape as equal to and encompassing all the other kinds of art. As an example of the references to other artists, is not, of course, just the old masters, but also to his rivals, as it were, or his predecessors, immediate predecessors. So this here is a very clear echo, if you like, of our friend here, Gainsborough, and Turner is very consciously paying tribute to Gainsborough. I don't think it's not saying I can do this better than Gainsborough. He's saying, well, you know, this is all part of the rich possibilities, range of possibilities of landscape. So it doesn't all have to be very grand, it can be, you know, kind of homely. And of course, here is probably one of the most obvious tributes to that one artist, that one master that Turner revered above all, and that is Claude Lorrain. And you might think this is a vision of Italy. It's not, it's actually a vision of Walton Bridge in the Thames Valley. So this is Turner consciously saying, well, I can combine the ideal and the actual in one image, in a way which, of course, Richard Wilson had been doing in a generation earlier. And this is why, of the great English masters, Wilson was very important to Turner. Right, have I sort of whetted your appetite for finding out more about the Liber Studio? It's a huge subject. It's probably not a very good subject for a spotlight. It's more like a floodlight you need on it, but hopefully that's whetted your appetite.